The committee had expected to be making runs to the city morgue, not returning rejuvenated elderly people back to the nursing home. Furthermore, the elderly made a fuss about going back. The super-secret underground committee was not set up to be a way station for re-establishing the lives of the miraculously cured elderly. Nor did they want to turn them loose into society. They wanted to monitor them for a few years to gauge their progress and verify if their healing was permanent or temporary. The program was put on hold until they sorted out the can of worms they had opened. Returning people who were fraught with problems of the aging when they were taken away and then healthier than most of the attendants that cared for them eventually caught the attention of the media. One such episode nearly blew the lid off the whole covert operation. The committee moved quickly and severed all links that could lead the events to them. They then implemented a new policy and relocated those who were still in the pipeline of being cured, giving them new lives and identities far from where they might attract attention. The elderly themselves never suspected a thing. They assumed that when they became ill, paramedics came and took them to a local hospital. They had no reason to think otherwise. There was no mention in the documents on how the committee handled the memory question. Perhaps they erased their old memories and implanted new ones. The scientists were in possession of alien equipment that could do that. The nursing home would have been notified that the patient died and was cremated. Extensive background checks were done to make sure there was no family or friends alive that might take an interest in their newly revived kin before bringing anyone into the program. The media soon lost interest when they failed to find anyone who could give them proof of what happened. A few healthy old people, those returned to the home before the committee changed that policy, with no story to tell, was not enough to keep the media interested for long. The myth of human autonomy, understanding the aliens, was a slow and difficult process. However, that was not the committee's biggest challenge. Instead, it was the arrogance that had developed over the years amongst committee members due to their untouchable status. That kind of power was difficult to control, and it threatened to undo the covert operation many times because of the power struggle between the members. They were not invincible, although that had become the mood. What happened at the nursing home could never have been tied directly to them. They were under far too many layers of bureaucracy to ever get caught. What concerned their superiors was the possibility of the media giants taking a serious interest in what took place at the nursing home and snowballing it into a full-blown inquiry, and possibly resulting into a real Senate investigation. With the equipment the committee had in its possession, they had the means to become more secretive than they already were. Technically, they were invisible. Only a handful of people in the world know of their existence, but with the use of the alien equipment they would become literally invisible, like the Invisible Man. For a time they were fearful of using the arsenal of alien gadgets they had up their sleeve, especially outside of their comfort zone, outside of their protected base of operations. They were afraid that if they bungled a mission and exposed their operation, that they and ultimately the whole organization could be destroyed. All those involved with the program, committee members and the scientists, are shadowed by what is appropriately called the cleanup team. The job of that team is to dispose of them along with their equipment in a matter of minutes should a mission be compromised and exposure to the program imminent. Killing one or all of them on the spot was not a last resort, but a certainty if they were unable to be removed from the scene expediently. The part about expediently bothered the committee members the most. How can the scientists or committee members in the field be untouchable and at the same time dispensable? It was a difficult reality for the prima donna committee members to swallow. As a result of that reality, expendable, they limited their exposure and avoided whenever possible risky assignments outside of their compound. Fear of being found out was not the only factor that held them back. There were other reasons they delayed taking the alien equipment off the base and into the homes of unsuspecting civilians. The collective belief in the sanctity of one's home did stir in the souls of the committee members. The ability to enter a person's house and go into their bedroom without their knowledge took getting used to. What made the whole thing acceptable was that the committee was aware that thousands of people are visited, some call it violated, by aliens every day. A few people know they are being abducted, but the vast majority of humanity has no clue that it is happening at all. The committee felt compelled to enter the realm where no man had yet gone, a place where up until then the aliens alone inhabited. We humans place their highest value on privacy. We naively think that our innermost thoughts belong only to us. We are living in a fantasy, an illusion with such thoughts. Privacy of body and mind is a human delusion, according to committee documents. The committee members came to that realization shortly after they were brought into the program, and have since concluded that one cannot break a trust of a fellow human being when truth and trust are illusions. After a few months or years, no one knows how long the harvesting of old people was continued, the committee decided that people from nursing homes were still the best and safest to test and experiment with. The old people were docile and ambivalent to the handling, poking and prodding, of the scientists who experimented on them. However, the scientists went about it differently than they did with their first trials and abducted their subjects from the care facilities. The black op technicians gained entry by using the alien device that allowed them to permeate solid objects and walk through walls. They used an unmarked passenger van to carry them and the equipment they needed to the site. The alien gadgets easily fit into a briefcase with room to spare, and the gadgets behaved for the most part, which was not always the case. The nursing home they picked for their first field assignment was located in a rural area, miles away from a large city. They didn't have operatives at the nursing home as they had in the past. This was a test to see how they would perform in an uncontrolled environment. They had simple instructions: abduct a patient, and take her back to the base or just drive around for a short time, then return her to the exact spot they picked her up from, 2 hours later. They hoped to accomplish this without anyone at the home knowing that she was missing. They had no plans to do anything to her, other than give her a 2-hour ride in the country. They were to return to the base, a temporary hideout, if they had unforeseen complications. They arrived at the destination an hour after nightfall. One of the committee members who drove in a separate unmarked car entered the building first. He entered through the front entrance posed as a state inspector, and told the attending nurse at the front desk that he was there to perform a surprise inspection. He was equipped with all the necessary credentials, and if they called any of the health departments for verification, committee members monitoring the calls coming and going from that building would have intercepted the phone call. While he kept the staff distracted, 3 of the committee members in the van looked for a dark area close to the building and out of view of the front office. Having selected a spot for their entry, they activated the alien equipment and instantly permeated through the brick wall, or as one of them said, "We were sucked through the building." They emerged into a room that was occupied by an elderly woman that looked to be in her 90s. She was sitting alone in a wheelchair in one corner of the 2-bedroom unit. There was no one else in the room with her, she appeared to be sleeping. The television was on, but the sound was turned down. When they passed through the wall, they did not feel a thing. The composition of the wall became as a whiff of smoke, but the energy field that emanated from the box caused the television and the lights in that room and those in the hall adjacent to the room to flicker. They had rehearsed entering a similar building back at the base before attempting this exercise, but they did not anticipate having the attendants converge on them all at once as they did during that exercise. There were 6 attendants on duty that night at the nursing home. When the lights started flickering in the twing of the building, all 6 of them went running to that location. The committee member whose job it was to distract the attendants instead had them so nervous from the surprise inspection that they overreacted. As the attendants converged on the room where the committee members had just entered through the brick wall, the committee members had no choice but to subdue and paralyze the attendants one by one as they entered the room. One touch of the alien wand to the head of the attendants rendered them paralyzed. The committee members then placed penny-sized discs on the temples of the attendants, and the attendants remained standing and fully conscious but unable to move or talk. The committee had never paralyzed healthy normal people before and never out of a controlled setting. They had 6 people standing limp inside of that room and looked like living mannequins with nothing but their eyes moving. because the committee had not planned to interfere with any of the staff or of the operation of the nursing home, they aborted the mission. This was a training mission, a way to judge the difficulty they might encounter when entering a private building with the intention of removing a person without rousing suspicion. In the past, they harvested from hospitals and nursing homes the number of people they needed with the help of insiders installed covertly into the management of those institutions. The new strategy allowed them to harvest without any inside connection. The motivation being that they could borrow people from any location at the time of their choosing. It also reduced their exposure by placing fewer operatives in the field and in the management of private institutions. The committee members removed the discs from the heads of the attendants, freeing them from the paralysis. Although the attendants were wide awake, they dropped like a ton of bricks as their legs gave away from under them the instant the discs were removed. They were disoriented, which was good because the four committee guys were in a panic and needed the extra time for damage control. 50 or more patients were suddenly left unattended, and the fact that anyone could at any moment walk into the building and find all the attendants piled in one of the rooms was a near disaster. The paralysis wore off about 1 or 2 minutes after the removal of the alien buttons from the heads of the attendants, but each attendant was affected differently. Some took longer to come out of the paralysis, according to the one member who remained behind to make sure all the attendants revived. According to him, it took more than 5 minutes for all the attendants to snap out of their dazed and disoriented minds. They remembered nothing of what happened to them, not why they were all in one location of the building or why they were all laying on the floor. As each individual regained equilibrium soon after the committee members left, the first of them to reach a phone called the fire department. The attendant had surmised that carbon monoxide or some other poisonous gas had leaked into the building from one of the furnaces. None of the members of the staff remembered there was an inspection in progress prior to them passing out. Apparently, the discs not only paralyzed people, but also left them with amnesia about what they experienced during and just prior to the time they were paralyzed. The committee members who were monitoring the phone lines the whole time continued to do so. They listened in on the conversation between the staff member and the fire and police departments. They made sure things were under control before they left. Only two of the attendants were taken to a hospital for observation and were released that same night. The others had no problems and declined to go to the hospital. No damage was done, and the final police report indicated that none of the elderly patients were affected. The report stated that the staff might have succumbed to the fumes from a cleaning solution that was found near the area they had their dizzy spells. Shortly after that fiasco, those in charge of the program pulled the plug on the use of nursing homes for good. No one will ever know. They did so for two reasons. First, they knew that all the newly rejuvenated old people would eventually draw attention and possibly give credence to the UFO phenomena. Secondly, the cost of re-establishing the lives of hundreds or thousands of people was prohibitive. The money that was earmarked for the committee was sufficient for the committee's covert operations. There was no contingency fund for humanitarian services to re-establish rejuvenated humans. If they increased their budget by an additional few million to allow for the added services, they risked becoming visible to the Congress, which ultimately funds all government programs, even those they know nothing about. In the years during the Cold War, it was simpler to finance clandestine operations, but after the collapse of the Soviet Union, funneling money to the committee was a covert operation in itself. Increasingly, the funding sources had become the committee's Achilles heel. The committee was told that the funding they received was still appropriated from the National Treasury, but that would not be the source in the future. Second encounter bill: the committee member that was abducted and allowed to observe the aliens had his second encounter. It happened 4 months after his first. They took him while he was working in his office during daylight hours. There were others in the building at the time, but he was working alone when it happened. It was around noon that he was taken. He was eating a sandwich that one of his colleagues had picked up for him in the cafeteria down the hall. He was eating his lunch while going over a report he had to turn in that afternoon. An instant later, he was in an alien ship without his sandwich. They did not give him an explanation of why he was not allowed to finish his lunch before whisking him away. Not that he asked, but it was certainly on his mind, and he knew he could keep no secrets from them. There was a woman in the craft with him. She was on a surgical table, and he was standing nearby. She was young, and somehow he knew her exact age. She was 19 years old. She was naked, yet he felt no sexual desires toward her, despite her attractive features. She was lying on the surgical table with a horrified look on her face. She was terrified and confused with no clue of what was going on. She was not able to talk, but he knew all her thoughts, a privilege he did not have the last time he was abducted. She kept her eyes on him, and in her mind kept asking, "Why are you doing this to me?" She was not sure if she was being raped or if she had been in some accident and was in the emergency room of a hospital. He knew her thoughts, but it wasn't mutual. She did not know his. He had the urge to speak to her and give her comfort, but he was unable to, verbally or telepathically. He knew she was 3 months pregnant, but he didn't know how he knew those things, or why. As he stood there watching her, her whole life was made known to him. He then realized why the aliens were giving him information gradually, while letting the hundreds of questions that popped into his head go unanswered. No human mind is big enough to hold but a fraction of what there is to know, and only piecemeal at that. The little information that he did receive about her was overwhelming his mind. But why did he need to know all about her? He felt he knew her but did not recall ever meeting her. He watched as the aliens removed the fetus from her body, and then carried it to an adjacent room. Another alien came back moments later and inserted another fetus into her. He was not told if it was the same fetus they took out of her or if it was a different one. If it was the same one, what had been done to it? They told him it was not yet time for him to know that answer. He was allowed to know that this girl was genetically linked to him. In fact, he was her biological father, even though he never met her mother. Her mother was implanted with his semen on board that same ship 19 years earlier. That fetus was his grandson. He was told that he fathered many others like her, and it was not important for him to have contact with any of them, nor would it be possible for him to have contact with them, even if he was allowed to know who they all were. He was not allowed to know the identity of the girl, his daughter, other than what they had already let him know, or from which city she was from. She could be from anywhere in the world, they told him, and after they returned him to his office he would never see her again. The aliens told Bill that the physical body was of little importance. It was a mere vessel that held the essence of what humans are. It made no difference that the girl and countless others are related to his body and DNA. The identity of a person had no bearing to the physical body other than looks. His genes did not pass on any part of the mind or soul, which is one and the same. However, disposition and some traits that a child shares with its parents are learned from them as they grow up and are influenced by the parents, and not necessarily a part of the gene pool. The ambiguity of that last statement was not explained to Bill, and the aliens did not feel they needed to clarify it. The whole scope of what the aliens are doing here on Earth would never be revealed to humanity, although there would be limited information given to some, like the information Bill received. There have been many throughout history that was given knowledge by the aliens, mostly in the form of new technology and ideas. From whom the information was coming from was not told to Bill. Some of the things that were divulged to him seemed pointless and made no sense and sounded very bizarre. Eat bananas on Wednesday, feed the lions every Friday. Other statements were unclear and confusing, save the rainforest, destroy the trees. Bill felt that many of the answers to his questions, when he received them, were purposely vague, others completely puzzling, and occasionally some were mean-spirited. He believed that they had tried to provoke anger in him a few times. After he was returned to his office he looked at the clock on the wall and determined he was gone for 1 hour. He had no recollection of them taking him or returning him. He found himself sitting at the desk in the same position he was in before his abduction. His half-eaten sandwich was still there. if it weren't for the fact that he was in an area with alien objects strewn all around him, he would have chalked it up to having fallen asleep at his desk and dreamt it all. The experience and his memory of it were clear, and he pondered what the aliens told him about his offspring not being his. He had two children at home with whom he had a strong bond and felt cheated and overwhelmed at the thought that he sired untold numbers of other children who are all strangers to him. He was depressed after that encounter. No one in his department noticed that he had been abducted. He took the rest of that day off and told no one in his office what had happened to him. As he drove home, he couldn't help but see a little bit of himself in everyone he passed. He never felt that his body was all that special. Why then did they use him as a human stud? Envy stymies the committee. 2 weeks went by before he told the committee members about his last abduction. When he did, rather than being excited about that revelation, his colleagues were envious and puzzled why no others in the group had been given the privilege he seemed to be enjoying. There was some jealousy in the committee, and his colleagues were less interested in what he had learned from the latest encounter. One of his colleagues accused him of making up the stories. They could not understand why he was singled out from the rest of them. Was he smarter than they? Was he better looking? Was his blood type special? They wanted to know why the aliens could not make themselves known to the whole committee. After all, they were in this together, they reminded Bill. The committee members had no doubt that aliens existed, but they had a difficult time believing Bill's abduction stories. They thought he was becoming delusional from the many years of working around the freak show that had become their labs and their lives. Bill was accused of dominating the committee meetings because he claimed to have more knowledge about the aliens than the rest. During that time, his colleagues voted to have him expelled from the committee. The higher-ups who felt his link with the aliens was real vetoed that vote. They then made matters worse by putting him in charge of the committee. His colleagues rebelled, and a mediator was brought in to patch up the rift. But it didn't work. Lack of cooperation between the members caused the program to be suspended and everyone went home. 2 months passed before the committee was reactivated. Presumably the department continued operating during that time, probably under the leadership of one of the higher-ups. An operation of the magnitude could not easily be brought to a stop. None of the documents indicated what went on while the committee was absent. Bill Smith was again put in charge of the new committee. Some of the original members were reinstated, others were transferred to different departments. Bill spent the 2 months vacationing in the Hawaiian Islands. While he was there, the aliens visited with him every day. He advanced to where he was allowed to roam freely aboard the alien craft. The craft moved at speeds that are inconceivable if taken out of the realm of science fiction, he told the committee. The aliens let him choose the destination, and as quickly as it formed in his mind, the craft was halfway there. He visited every country on Earth and even spent time on Earth's moon and other moons in the solar system, but they were not mentioned by name. The aliens declined his request to visit the planet Jupiter, a favorite of his since childhood. His father had bought him a telescope when he was 9 and he spent countless nights watching the night skies, and the rings around Jupiter blew him away. They told him that other parts of the solar system were still off limits to him, but that possibly in the future he would be able to visit a few of the planets. It frustrated Bill that the aliens did not indulge others on the committee. It made it difficult for him to share his excitement with them since they remained suspicious of him and his tales of adventure. All the committee members did spend time with the aliens and presumably been to other planets, but they were not allowed to remember their adventures. Probably a good thing. Bill told them that they were treated no different than the majority of those who were abducted, except that he was able to verify that it did happen to them. His colleagues questioned him on why they were taken but not allowed to remember like he was able to. Bill could not give them answers. He could only relay to them what happened to him, and only what the aliens allowed him to know happened to him. Many of his experiences remain blocked, he told his colleagues. The aliens told Bill to discourage his colleagues from going to anyone for regression therapy. Since the time Bill told his colleagues that they had been abducted, Some of them did not believe him and were considering undergoing regression to confirm that it did take place. The aliens pointed out to Bill that they can implant whatever memories they wish into the subconscious mind of humans, and that many of the episodes that are recalled by those who have been abducted are intentionally painful and misleading. They are programmed that way, to dissuade the abducted from learning the truth of what really happened to them. A truth that is not for them to know, and is none of their business to know. Bill was told that humans in the Western world have the illusion of personal rights. That belief is not prevalent in the rest of the world. Humans do not own their bodies, they are on loan to them. To own something, the aliens told Bill, means you have total control of it. What human has control of his body or anything else for that matter? No human can keep his body from dying, or from becoming ill. The only thing that humans can do is feed and take care of their bodies. Not much more complicated than putting fuel in a car and changing the oil once in a while. Humans are not even in dominion of their own soul. All the bodies on this planet belong to the aliens. The aliens did not disclose to Bill, who owns the soul, just that they, the aliens, had no claim to that part of humanity. On his last two encounters with the aliens, they showed him how to perform some of the medical procedures that he and the committee had been struggling with during some of their experiments. The new information helped to convince his colleagues that he was either a genius or did, in fact, have contact with the aliens. Because of the complexity of what the aliens demonstrated to him, Bill could only perform the procedures on the alien craft. The craft provided a level of purity that did not exist anywhere outside of it. It was also less strenuous working in the craft, similar to being on the moon with its reduced gravitational pull. Working in the ship allowed them to perform with ease and speed that was impossible anywhere else. The purity of the air helped them to think clearer, and they performed superhuman feats while in the ship. Bill showed his colleagues how to repair a severely damaged heart. They operated on a woman badly injured in a one car accident. She was drunk and ran off the road after leaving a bar. Like the rest of the people that the committee acquired, she had no family, and no friends that could be identified. The hospital that she was taken to had given up on her and expected her to die that morning. When the committee received her, she was already declared brain dead by her physician. Her body was still alive, but her heart and liver were damaged beyond human ability to repair them. The committee was going to repair her heart and then repair her damaged liver. Bill and two others on the committee were accomplished surgeons prior to coming to the program. Bill was good at his medical profession, but an invisible force far superior to his earthly knowledge guided his hands, plus he had the use of some of the alien gadgets. During the open heart surgery, Bill left the craft for only a moment to get more sutures. They didn't have a nurse, so they took turns fetching things. He left at a point where the woman was stabilized. When he returned 3 minutes later, he found the other two surgeons standing over the dead body. They both had a confused look on their faces. Outside the craft, they told Bill that everything that they were doing during the operation seemed clear and made sense until he left the craft. They then reverted to knowing only what they had learned in medical school and in their practice before coming into the program. There was no mention whether the woman was connected to life support, pumps and IVs to keep her stable during the operation. Gift of knowledge. Apparently the aliens gave Bill a gift that he was not aware of. He had a reservoir of knowledge installed into his subconscious mind that the others didn't have. The information only came to him as he needed it, and was somehow shared with those who need to know while assisting him. It was obvious to Bill that he was being primed for something larger than himself, but he wasn't sure for what purpose. Much of what was stored in his head by the aliens was not available to anyone but him. He was not aware of all his capabilities and only became so when he actually needed the information. He was the best doctor in the world and getting better by the day. He was able to diagnose and repair afflictions that baffled the best doctors. But he could not publish any of it. The knowledge was not at his disposal to do as he wished. It came when he needed it for a work in progress and left as soon as the job was done. He tried many times to write down some of the procedures soon after he performed them but was unable to make any sense of what he accomplished. Therefore, he was unable to share his knowledge with his colleagues, which served to intensify the distrust that already existed between him and the other members. Some committee members saw that as confirmation that Bill was isolating himself. At some point, Bill decided it was counterproductive for him to work with the others. He knew the feeling was mutual. All the committee members had become uncomfortable working around him.